Good morning.
Good morning.
Ooh, Yasher Kalach. Let's devote like 5 minutes at the end to analyzing this talus. But we'll pick up right now where we left off. We basically brought to a conclusion last week the sugya of Gardumin, of chapter of Tzitzit strings, and now we're going to begin the sugya of the Krichos, of how exactly is one supposed to wrap these strings and to knot the strings one another. This is where a lot of the variations in Minhagim amongst people who wear different types of tzitzis originate in. How many times do you wrap the shamash around the other seven strings? How many times do you tie the knots? Exactly, yeah, where do you wrap it around? And obviously, when you're dealing with white strings and exclusively with white strings, so there's a little bit less variety that you can do when you're dealing with white and blue strings. So then there's a lot more variety and consequently many more shitos about how it should be done. So right now we're just going to see the basic texts, which are relatively short. And then perhaps we'll branch out from there into an analysis of some of the different customs and how they're rooted in the text and what the logic is behind them. So we should pick up, we're basically in the middle of Daf Lamed Tes Amud Aleph. Let's count how many lines down it is. 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, 12, 14, 15 lines down. In my Gemara, it's the third to last word on the line. It's the word Yosiv. Yosiv, with the Taf and the Shin interchangeable. So what would it be in Hebrew?
Yeshav.
Yeshav, right? So Yosef Rabbah. Right, everyone there? 15 lines down. Yosef Rabbah. Rabbah Yeshav. Yeah, Rabbah sat down. V'ka'amar mishmi d'Rav. And he was saying the following shir in the name of Rav. I'm not sure when Amuram said shir standing up, when they said shir sitting down. But he sat down and he said the following in the name of Rav. I'm going to wait for Mr. Arfi, Rabbi Arfi. I'm going to wait for Rabbi Arfi to get his seat. Yeah, no. So Rabbi said, Chut shel kerech oile min haminyan. When you're counting the strings, so you're supposed to count the shamash string together with the others, meaning if you're going to be using two strings, the shamash counts as one of the two. If you're going to be using four strings, the shamash counts as one of the four. If you're going to be using eight strings or 16 strings, the shamash counts as one of the 16. And if you hold like the Rashba, that you may not exceed the 16 strings, then that means 16 strings include shamash, not 16 strings excluding the shamash. So again, if there's a bidi'evet, an upper limit, the shamash is included within the upper limit. And if there's an ideal number of strings, then again, the shamash is included in the ideal number. It's not that ideal number exclusive of the shamash. Thank you so much. Baruch atah Adonai Eloheinu Melech HaOlam
Shehakol Nihyeh B'Dvaro. Amen.
So Amar Lei Rav Yosef. Rav Yosef said, you have this in the name of Rav. Does anyone know whenever you have a pair of Amorayim? So you have Abaye, who's paired together with Rava. Does anyone know who the pair together with Rav Yosef is?
Rabba.
Rabba always goes with Rav Yosef. So who always goes together with Rav?
Shmuel.
So here we have this statement that Rabba was saying this in the name of Rav, and Rav Yosef responds to Rabba, right, the member of that pair. He responds, this is not Rav's statement, but rather Shmuel Amra. Shmuel is the one who said it. It's not Rav, it's Shmuel. Okay, the other member of the pair. So the Gemara is troubled. Velo Rav. So Shmuel Amra, velo Rav. Shmuel said it, and not Rav. And the Gemara says, Itmar Nami. And we also have another statement like this. Omer Rabba Bar Bar Chana. Rabba Bar Bar Chana says, Sochli Rabbi Yoshaya Dimin Usha. Rabbi Yoshaya was Misocheach. He talked to me about this. And he said, Chut Shalkerech Ola La Min Haminyan, that when you're counting the number of strings, whether it's the ideal number or whether it's the absolute maximum number, that number is inclusive of the shamish, of the chut, the string, which you're korech, which you use to wrap the other strings with. So that's a pretty simple statement. The Gemara goes on, Yosef Rava, v'ka'amar mishmei de Shmuel. Rava was sitting, and he was saying in the name of Shmuel, Techeles shekarach ruba. If a person wrapped most of his strings, right, Techeles here is simply a fill-in for the word tzitzis. Right, the Rosh points out that this may indicate something about the primacy of the Techeles in tzitzis, but Techeles, tzitzis, shekarach ruba, that you wrapped up most of it. If you take a look at your tzitzis, is most of it wrapped? Is most of the tzitzis wrapped?
No.
Right, the tzitzis stretches from here till here. Is most of it wrapped or is most of it loose? Most of it
is wound up.
Okay, so if you count it by the shamish string, if I unravel the shamish string, so then it's passable, right? It is passable that the shamish string, the amount that's wrapped, because it obviously, you get a lot more into a little space when it's wrapped up, it's passable that the shamish string would end up taking up almost as much space one way or another. Here the Gemara seems to be saying that the ideal tzitzis, and we'll see this more explicitly in a moment, the ideal tzitzis will have a 2-to-1 ratio. In other words, there's going to be 2 units of loose string for every 1 unit of wrapped string. However, this is not ma'akev b'di'eved. It's ideal, but it's not absolutely necessary. If someone were to wrap up and wrap and wrap and wrap until you've wrapped up almost everything, then you're still yotzei the mitzvah of tzitzis, which such a pair of tzitzis. What if you literally wrapped everything? It's not ruba, but it's kula. Right, rove is always contrasted with kol. Rove means almost 100%, anywhere between 51% and 100%. What if it was literally 100% wrapped all the way to the top? What would be the halacha then? Why not? We learned about this last week.
A kanaf. You have to have kanaf. You don't have, no kanaf, you're not in tzitzis.
There's 2 parashiyos of tzitzis. Right, one of them, it says, Gedilim ta'aselach, a gedil is a braid, the wrapped part. And the other one says, Pesil techeles, or tzitzit, which means loose strings. So we paskin, although there's a machlokas amuram about this, but we paskin that you need both of them. In order to satisfy both parshios, you need to have a gedil, a braid part of the tzitzis, and a petil, and the loose part of the tzitzis. If you're missing one of the two, so then you're only fulfilling one parsha, not 2 parshios, and the Torah is a single unit. It's all meant to be read together. And so tzitzis must have both a gedil, both a braided part, and a pesil. So if a person made the entire tzitzis braided and wrapped, and he didn't leave any loose threads behind, so he's not fulfilling the parsha that we say in Kriyat Shema every day, that of the pesil techeles, when that's a talk. And al kanafei v'gdei am ledora samanas nu al tzitzis hakanaf pesil techeles. You're missing the pesil. The Gemara even says that the word tzitzis itself indicates loose strings, perhaps, etymologically. And so a person can't be korech es kula, but he could be korech es ruba. It's not ideal. It doesn't have the 2-to-1 ratio, but it still remains kosher. So techeles, shekarach, ruba, kosher. Now, what you're saying is interesting. There's a Baal Amar who says that techeles ought to mean literally techeles wherever it appears. It doesn't mean a tzitzis. So if that's the case, then one has to wonder whether it's like whether the Baal Amar will go with the classical interpretation, which is that we're referring to the entire, you know, tzitzis braid unit, right? Or whether we're referring only to the techeles string, which is the one that's wrapped, which would mean a totally different ratio. Whether or not that's the case, we paskin that it's referring to the entire unit and not just to the techeles string, but it's a very interesting possibility to consider that maybe the techeles here is literal and the ratio is within the one string that's wrapped and not within the other ones. So, right. So that's why the Rishonim, the Rosh, the Ramban, they say that techeles is the ikar of the tzitzis. So just like what would be a good example in a food, right? You can have a good food example.
The bread is the equal of the food.
No, I'm talking about like if you have ingredients, right? You can have a food. You can have like a mushroom. an ice cream sandwich. I'll shame the ice cream. Right? That's the icker. You don't say ice cream cookie sandwich. Right? You can say peanut butter and jelly sandwich. You don't say peanut butter jelly and bread sandwich. Well, that's a little bit more complicated in Hilchos Brachos. But basically, that seems to be how the Rosh understands it, that the Tchilas has some sort of a primacy in tzitzis.
Where does it come from, actually? That Tchilas is such a valuable color or whatever, according to the Torah.
Yeah, that's probably where it's from, because it's very rare. It's very rare, and presumed.
Tchilas is rare.
The Tchilas is rare, yes. It's harder to acquire, so that gives it a certain measure of chashivos. Also, the symbolism of Tchilas, right, according to some, might be more elevated than the symbolism of the white. The Tchilas reminds us of the sky, reminds us of the Kisei HaKavod. What does the white remind us of? We'll see tomorrow. But some people will say that the Tchilas reminds us of the most exalted things that we can be reminded of, as opposed to the white, which perhaps reminds us of more mundane things. We saw the Marshal who said the white also reminds us of HaKadosh Baruch Hu and HaKadosh Baruch Hu's palace, but some say that the Tchilas has that Maila, more even than the white. Yeah. Yeah, so the Midrashim say that the Jews in Mitzrayim, they were constantly looking forward to the redemption, and they were not just looking forward to the redemption, but preparing themselves for the redemption. And so they planted and they tended trees that eventually became the beams of the Mishkan. The Atzei Shittim, exactly. So perhaps when they were leaving, they made sure to take sufficient quantities of dye, or of the ingredients for dye, in order to manufacture tchilas in the midbar. That's what the Chafetz Chaim says.
Tchilas was not made from vegetables. It was made from animals.
Yeah.
Okay, so they took a little fish tank with the snails inside of it.
It's a big fish tank.
Big fish tank, yeah.
Would it matter that because nowadays we can't get the real tchilas?
Real tchilas. And so they say that they have it, but 100 years ago they said that they had it, but they had something else, and then that became discredited. And 100 years before that, they also said that they had it, but that was a third thing, and that also became discredited. So the question becomes, even though, you know, as contemporaries of the contemporary Tchilas, we're fairly confident that it seems that ours is better than all the previous generations' Tchilas, but at the same time, with a broader historical perspective, we're of the potential that a generation can be fairly convinced that their tchilas is a tchilas, and that a later generation can find some sort of a flaw with the proofs and prove that something else is the real tchilas. So even though we don't see what the difficulty is with our proofs, but we do see what the difficulty is with the previous generation's proofs, and therefore we're worried that a future generation will come along and find the flaw with ours that we don't see right now.
Nowadays,
it's
from a snail.
It has to be a snail.
The chief rabbi of Israel, former chief rabbi.
Yeah, Rabbi Herzog.
Herzog did a whole study of it, and he did a chemical analysis of the previous one where the Hasidic Rebbe said
the
Regina. So, and he showed that can't be that one, but he ruled out another mollusk, which he said was no good because it didn't match the scales of it, or the skin of it was not the blue color. So, but then now they said that's only when you take it out of the water, but in the water it actually matches. In other words, it is blue. So all the indications are that once that particular stuff that is taken out and it hits the air, it does turn blue. And in the natural habitat, it does have blue. So even though Rabbi Herzog said it's no good, but now they know in the natural habitat, it is, the color is blue on the outside. So all of the simonim that we found is that particular, it hits that sequence. So that's why a lot of people say that that's the real
tchilas. Right, but so this was a big question. That someone said tshuva, shaila terav el yashav. He said, if we can't see any flaws, right, in the proof that this is a tchilas, so then why doesn't everybody wear the tchilas? Why doesn't everybody wear Rabbi Herzog's tchilas? So Rav el Yashav sent him back a response which had three different parts to it. And one of them, which is the one that I'm emphasizing right now, was not substantive, but rather methodological. And that methodological point is that we need to approach our analyses, whether they're scientific or halachic or a combination of the two, with a certain degree of humility. That being aware of the history of the Tcheles, the search for Tcheles, we happen to be aware that there were a number of things that in previous generations, different Gedolim were convinced, right, that these were Tcheles, because how can it be anything else? It matches, you know, matches everything. And nonetheless, right, after a while, working scientifically, halachically, whatever it was proven that there was some better candidate for the Tcheles. And so the concern is that we don't have any substantive objections, I think is pretty much what Rebbe Yashiv was saying, but methodologically, if we approach this with the degree of humility that our historical consciousness demands, will now you'll say, aye, but so what about other halachos, right? You know, we're going to just take, so he has two other reasons there that he talks about as well, but that's just the methodological point that I'm making in response to Alvin, which is that that because we have this uncertainty, right, we're aware that there's a chance that there's some sort of fallacy in our, you know, in our reasoning, even though we're not aware of what that fallacy is, but we're still, the Rishoner knew about it, and other Gedolim knew about it, and they didn't put it in, so it means that this is, right, this is an area of halacha where it's more appropriate to be humble than to be bold. I think that's kind of what he's trying to argue.
On the other hand, this is a mitzvah d'oraisa, and a mitzvah d'oraisa, if you have any...
What is a mitzvah
d'oraisa? The
Tcheles.
The mitzvah d'oraisa. Of course it is. So therefore, that a mitzvah d'oraisa should be if there's a consensus that this a sort of universal consensus that this is it, so you should go to Chumrah. We want to be Mekayim the mitzvah of the Oraisa.
Wait a second, is Tcheles and Lavan two separate mitzvahs, or is it one mitzvah?
Is it a mitzvah d'oraisa?
Well, tzitzis is a mitzvah d'oraisa. Huh? Let's find out. Mr. Amster is going to tell us. Tzitzis is a mitzvah d'oraisa. Is tcheles a mitzvah d'oraisa?
I don't believe that tcheles is a mitzvah d'oraisa.
You don't think that tcheles is a mitzvah? No. The mitzvah is to have, you know, ideally white and blue, but if you don't have white and blue... If you don't have the white, you're fulfilling the same mitzvah with the white. You're not missing one of the tariyak mitzvahs, just it's not as ideal. So the consequences of not putting on tcheles are relatively lower than of not taking an esrog for that. You know, if you don't take an esrog, you don't have arba minim at all. But if you have the white and not the blue, you still have a mitzvah, which may be one of the ways that this Mishnah informs contemporary practice. Okay, so let's see.
I'm sorry to interrupt, but are we concerned with the hue of the color of the tcheles or the origin of it?
I'm not going into that right now. I haven't researched it properly yet. When we get to the relevant sugyos, then hopefully we'll...
Why? Because today we're so technologically advanced. You go to any Home Depot, and if you want to copy the color of tcheles, you give it to them, and they'll copy it.
Oh, if that's what you mean, yeah. It has to come from a certain animal.
I'm asking, does it have to be the origin of the chilazim?
Yeah, it has to come from the chilazim. The color is not enough. It has to come from the chilazo. You have to have the right ingredients. It can't just be...
No, I'll give you kalalavan instead.
Can we say that it's methodological?
People say just the same thing.
That it's your logic?
There are people who were cheating.
Yes, you can. Okay, let's move onwards.
And that's what the Mara says specifically. Yeah,
right. So the tzitzis, according to most, we shown him the tcheles, right, when the word tcheles appears in the Gemara, it doesn't refer only to the blue strings, but when the word tcheles appears in the Gemara, it very often refers to the entire unit of tzitzis, both the blue and the white, but the blue is considered to be the most interesting, the most appealing, right, of the components, and therefore the entire tzitzis is called tcheles. So tcheles, shekarach ruba kishera, that if you wrapped up the most of the tzitzis, you didn't leave that two-thirds unwrapped and loose, nonetheless the tzitzis is kosher bidi eved. Rav Chiya, breeder of Nasan, masni hachi. Rav Chiya, the son of Rav Nasan, taught as follows. Amar Rav Huna, Amar Rav Sheshis, Amar Rav Yirmiyah bar Abba, Amar Rav. Four different Amoraim, each one reporting in the name of his Rabbi. Tcheles shekarach ruba kishera. If you wrapped up most, 90, 98, 99% of the tzitzis, as long as you leave, I guess, how much do you have to leave? It's not going to be so clear. Kedei Aniva only is kosher by Gardumin, but that sounds like Lechatchila, you might have to leave a little bit more than that. But so if you're korech most of it, you're kosher. Ve'afilu lo korach ba'ela chol ya'achas. So we talk about the maximum amount of wrapping that you can do. That's rove of the talis. Anything less than 100% or anything that's, you know, that's not too close to 100%. What's the minimum amount of wrapping that you can do? So that's the second statement. Afilu, even if lo korach ba'ela chol ya'achas, if he didn't wrap only one cholya, still the tzitzis is kshera. What exactly is a cholya?
Rashi says
three times around. So if he wraps a shamash around twice, right, one and two. So now it's wrapped around twice. That's not a cholya. That would not be kosher if this were the only thing that was wrapped. But if I wrap it one more time, I've got three. I need like a gigantic, I need like those strings from the bridge to wrap around. Then everyone will be able to see. So then if I do it three times, that's one cholya. I make a knot. Right? The minimum midiraisa is I wrap the shamish three times around. I tie one knot on top of the shamish. And that's the minimum that's kosher midiraisa. So we'll have to figure out as we go on, how do we get from those one time, three times around, and then one knot on top of it, double knot probably, how do we get from there to wrapping what we do four times around, each time many more than three, and up to 10 double, you know, 10 single knots, which are five double knots. Where do we get the exact numbers that we have? So that's where we're going to ponder as we move onwards. And let's just see the rest of the Gemara, and that'll already begin to give us a foundation for the current minhagim that we practice. Noye techeles, the most beautiful, right? Noy means na'e, beautiful. The most beautiful type of tzitzis is shlish gedil, one third a braid, and shnei shlishe anaf, and two thirds, back to our tree metaphor, two-thirds branches. So we're not calling it ikar, right? But we are calling the strings the anaf. Earlier we had the braids called the ikar. So two-thirds loose, one-third wrapped, and that's the ideal measurement of the tzitzis. Kama shiur cholya, what's the measurement of one cholya? Tanya, Rabbi Omer, Rabbi says, kidei sheyikroch, in order to wrap it, and Yishne, Sheni, do it a second time, and Yishalish, Shalosh, to do it a third time. So that's the source for what you quoted earlier from Rashi, that Echolya means three times wrapped, once to be Korech, once to be Mishneh, once to be Shlishi. You've got three wraps, and that's one Cholya, so that establishes the minimum midyoraisa. You wrap the shamash around three times, tie that knot to Kesher Elyon Dioraisa. That is the minimum kosher tzitzis midyoraisa. Tana. One knot is midyoraisa, and the rest of the knots are minhagim. Right? Maybe one more is midyoraisa.
Wrap around a single finger three times,
meaning if all you have is a wrap that's three times the shamish around and then a knot.
What do you call them, the shamish?
The shamish is a string that you're using to wrap around the other seven. So if you wrap that shamish string three times around the other seven and then tie, you're kosher. Yeah. Exactly. Somebody asked me, how do you measure the going around? Because very often, right, very often when you have the tzitzis, so if you twist them a little bit like this, so then it looks like it's a lot more. If you twist them like this, then it looks like it's less. So how do you measure it? So in our tzitzis, that's not such a big deal, and I'll explain more in depth why tomorrow, but the fact is that we're kosher for sure, right, with the three, right, we start off with seven, even if we only have six, right, we're still fine with the araisa. So we're dealing here with the question of the custom. But he wanted to know, let's say that it's on the Diraisa level. Let's say that you only have, you're making the minimal tzitzis, you're going to wrap it three times, and then if you twist it this way, it'll be three, but if you twist it this way, it'll only be two and a half. So then it will be a real shaila, mid Diraisa. Nowadays, the tzitzis, you know, the fact that we do what we do is more of a minog, and therefore, what personally I do is when I'm wrapping it, I make sure that when I wrap it, I go around until I bring the string back to the place where it started. I go around again until I bring the string back to where it started, etc. And as long as when I was wrapping it, the string was back to where I began the wrapping it from, meaning I made it a full circle, that's what I consider to be a full kricha. Is at the time that I'm wrapping it, and then even if after I tie it, if it gets twisted this way, it looks like more, and if it gets twisted this way, it looks like this. I tend to do it based on how I'm tying it, but I don't know if I don't have a source for that. That's just how I've made my tzitzis in the past.
Methodological.
No, methodological would mean I would have a source for it. Right. So that's what we have. Shir cholya kedisha yikroch v'yishna v'yishalish wrap. Wrap a second time and wrap a third time. Tana. This is the critical line. Tana. Braisa tells us. Hapoches. The person who's doing the minimum, the pachot. You're doing the minimum. Lo yifchot misheva. He shouldn't do any less than seven. The hamosif. And a person who's adding. Lo yosif al shoshesrei. He shouldn't add on more than 13. What are we talking about here? No less than seven what? No less than seven
circles.
One second. So does that? One second. Let's deal with Mr. Schwartz first, and then we can go to the other pshatim, right? So I'm going to tell you that all the pshatim are going to have a basis in Rishonim, but I want to analyze the strengths and the weaknesses of each one. So Mr. Schwartz is suggesting that when we say that there should be no fewer than seven, what we mean is that you take the shamish. You wrap it once around the other seven, you wrap it twice around the other seven, you wrap it three times around the other seven, you wrap it four times around the other seven, you wrap it five times around, six times around, seven times around. That should be the minimum number of wrappings that you do with the shamish around the other strings. Is everyone happy with that pshat?
That's what we do.
The advice of Mr. Schwartz is suggesting that it means that you should never have fewer than seven of these.
So they're wrapping
one, two, three,
around.
Four, five.
Right.
Exactly. So is everyone happy with that pshat? That you should not have fewer than seven times the shamish wrapped around the other seven strings?
It contradicts
the previous b'risa. Right? The b'risa says that it's kosher with three, and here it says... Three is kosher, so how can this b'risa say no fewer than seven if the previous b'risa said that even three is fine? Now, is it possible to suggest that the distinction between the b'risos is lechatchila versus b'di'aved? And the b'risa that says that three is kosher means if you are in a situation where nothing else is available, you can still be yotzei the mitzvah of tzitzis with three. However, if you have your ideal situation, so then you should have a minimum of seven.
Or a minimum of 13.
Or a minimum of 13.
Maximum.
A maximum of 13.
No,
so, well, one second. If we're saying that the minimum is three, right, then the ideal is seven. So then what's the maximum of 13? You're telling me then that if you have less than three, it's possible, and if it's more than 13, it's possible. Is that what the Bryce is saying? If you have less than three, it's possible, and more than 13... Well, so one second. If that's the case, Mr. Amster, one second. If that's the case, so then why is it? It says, Hapoches lo yifchos mishava, the Hamosif lo yosif al 13. So those two then are not parallel, according to you. Because according to you, Hapoches lo yifchos mishava means that you shouldn't do less than seven, but it's okay to do less than seven. But Hamosif lo Yosef al 13 means that you shouldn't do more than 13, and if you do more than 13, it invalidates its tzitzis. What happens in Braisa, you would expect that if the two halachos are in the same Braisa, the formulation, the structure is parallel, right? There's minimum, maximum, they should both be the same.
Well, you could say that it's just like noi trailers. It's odd numbers. Nice to do it that way.
It's okay, so it's nice. So which one is nice? Is it the 7 or is it the 13?
Well, it depends. The symbol of the 7 is 7 days creation of the world. 3 days, 3 can say mezumen. 13 you can say is that's why you have to stick to the numbers in order to fulfill the mitzvah.
The Gemara brings their own reason. It's okay. You don't have to bring your own.
We'll see the next line. We'll see in the next line. We'll see in the next line.
What's lo yifkos? It's not like abrikosos. Lo yifkos abrikosos. Just say what you're supposed to do. What people
are right. So, Pasha Pshat, I'm still going to accept Mr. Schwartz's interpretation, and that is, right, that is that if you're going to wrap it around, you can do any number between 7 and 13. Any of those 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, any of those 7 numbers are fine, and each one is equally ideal. So in other words, there isn't a single ideal, but there's a range of ideal number of times to wrap the shamash around the other 7 strings. Amazing, this is an amazing dogma, right, for halacha, right, in general, that sometimes, not always, not necessarily even most of the time, but sometimes there's a range of potential ideal ways of doing things, and so here by tzitzis, poskim say that that if as long as you don't go below 7, you've got the ideal. Whether it's 7 or 8 or 9 or 10, as long as you don't go above 13, you've got the ideal. And that's why if you count on most Ashkenazi tzitziot and certainly on the Sfardi tzitziot, you'll discover that the kricha, the cholya, that has the fewest number of wrappings, has 7. And the kricha that has the most wrappings has 13. But we don't go below 7, and we don't go above 13 in order to fulfill what this braisa tells us. Don't go under 7, don't go over 13. But, well, there's a machlokas. I'm not sure whether we follow the Arizal or whether we follow the Shulchan Aruch, but there's a machlokas whether it's 7, 8, 11, 13, or 7, 9, 11, 13. Yeah. So that is one interpretation of the braisa. We've been matstick Mr. Schwartz's interpretation, but right, there's another interpretation of the braisa that gets you out of this contradiction much more smoothly. The previous braisa says a minimum of 3 times wrapped around. This braisa says a minimum of 7 somethings. What could this braisa be talking about other than the number of times that the shamash should be wrapped around the 7? Seven gnats. Interesting. That you should have a minimum of 7 gnats, a maximum of 13 gnats, and so do we count the double gnats as 1 or as 2? Do you count each double gnat, right? The double gnat as 2, so then we've got 10, which is in there. If you count the double gnats as a single gnat each time, then we're actually not doing what's ideal. But who said cholyas? Who said Someone said cholyas. Okay, so you said cholyas also. Okay, so that seems to be the other authoritative reading of this braisa, that the previous braisa told us the number of times that you wrap the string in order to form a cholya, and this braisa is telling me the number of cholyas that we should have. Now, what's the problem with reading the braisa this way? What's the problem with saying that the braisa is telling me that the ideal number of cholyas should be somewhere in between 7 and 13? Gnats, okay, but not just gnats, right? Because if cholyas mean number of times that you have something wrapped,
we don't do that.
We don't do that exactly, right? The problem is that we assume that our custom is based on the Shulchan Aruch, is ratified, right, by all the rabbanim who saw us observing our custom, And if this was against a braisa, then certainly a rabbi sometime, probably a lot of rabbis and a lot of great rabbis, ought to have said, everyone needs to change their tzitzis in order to conform with what the braisa says. So the fact that the braisa says a minimum of 7, and we have, how many cholyas do we have?
4
cholyas, right? That would seem to be a challenge to this interpretation of the braisa.
I've seen people with a lot of cholyas.
I'm talking.
Sorry.
I just counted on mine. That is 4 wrappings. The first one is 7, the second one is 8, the third one is 12, the fourth one is 13.
7, 8, 12, and 13.
I just counted.
So you're going to be doing the achlokes between, right, between the Shulchan Aruch and the Arizal about whether the final number should be 39 or 40. You've got 40. Okay. I think most people have 39, although I think it's possible, like I mentioned before, if you twist the cholyas one way or another, sometimes it can look like one more or one less.
I took that into account.
Oh, you took it. So you've got a 40. Okay, so you've got a 40 wrapping, which is, I forget who says what, but there is a machlokas, whether it should be 39, Hashem Echad is Gematria 39, 40 is Gematria something else, I don't remember what it is, and so there is such a machlokas. So, well, tomorrow, Bezos Hashem, we'll see what it's based on. So what do we have? That the Braisa says, if this interpretation is correct, that we're supposed to have 7 times wrapped around, and we only do 4. So, first of all, when we say 7 times wrapped around, what is it that separates one cholya from the next? If a cholya means 3 times wrapped around, why can't you just have one cholya followed by another cholya without anything in between?
Separation is not practical.
I'm saying, why can't, like Rabbeinu Tam sits this, what he did was, is he made a double knot, and then he made all of his wrappings, one after the other, and then he made 3 knots on top.
If it comes unraveled, you're
so 1 second, so according, in Rabbeinu Tam sits this, was there only one cholya, even though it had 39 wrappings, or perhaps it was 39 wrappings, or 39 divided by 3, which is 13. Meaning maybe each unit of 3 wrappings is a cholya, regardless of whether it's separated from the next unit by a knot, or whether it's a blue unit separated from the next blue unit by a white unit. Maybe it makes no difference. Maybe a cholya, by definition, is 3 times of the shamish wrapped around the other 7 strings, and therefore, if you have 39 strings, then perhaps you've got 13 cholyas. 40 wouldn't work with that, by the way. Right? But 39 would. It's exactly 13 divided by times 3. Now, it might have worked in Rabbeinu Tam's tzitzis, because he had all 39 in sequence. But it's not going to work with our tzitzis, because we have 7, 8, right, or 9, right, and then 11 or 12, and then 13. So if you divide those into units of 3, you'll end up, the first one will have 2, but then that last wrapping, you're missing. So you've got, what, 2 plus 2, right, or 2 plus 3, that's 4 or 5, and then you've got another 3, so you've got 7 or 8, and then you've got another 4, which is 12. Okay, so you may still be in the range, anywhere between 7 and 13, so even though our cholyas have a little couple of extra wrappings here and there, but we're still within the range, and so perhaps that's the answer. However, there's a second explanation, which is advanced to justify, right, our practice, and that is that perhaps this insistence on having between 7 and 13 cholyas is only in the days when they had real tcheles on their tzitzis. But nowadays that we don't have the real tcheles, having this particular number is not going to serve its function. There's a reason why the Gemara prefers to have somewhere between 7 and 13, and that reason can only be fulfilled if a person is wearing tzitzis with tcheles. But if a person is wearing tzitzis which is exclusively white, so then the reason cannot be fulfilled. And that brings us to the next line of Gemara and the answer to Boaz's question. Let's read the next line of Gemara. Hashem Hapoches lo yefchos misheva. The reason that a person should not have fewer than seven is keneged shiva rakiyim, parallel to the seven rakiyas, which are some sort of a alternate universe, right? Or something along those lines. And you've got seven of them, and in between them, whatever that means, I don't know if it means spatially or in some other dimension, but in between those universes are what the Gemara in Chagiga describes as avirim. And so you've got the seven rakiyas, and in between seven rakiyas, between one and two, there's an avir, and two and three, and three and four, and four and five, and four and five, and six, and six and seven. So you've got seven rakiyas, six avirim, for a total of 13. So the seven is kenega the shiva rakiyim, and when we say amosif lo yosif al shloshesre, that the maximum should be 13, that's keneged, it's parallel to the shiva rakiyim and the shisha avirin shebineyam, the seven, the six spaces that are between them. So the Rosh and others say, if the symbolism of the seven is parallel to the seven rakiyas. How do we usually translate rakiya? Am I correct in saying that it's an alternate universe or
heaven?
Okay. My feeling is that like a telescope is not going to be able to discern these seven heavens, right? But universes, alternate universe, something. I'm not sure that it's got to be
it's
in
layers,
the dimension.
It's layers between here and the Shemayim. But it is, you know, like we say that Moshe brought the Torah all the way down, and then because it went all the way up, means there are like seven layers between Kolosh Baruch Hu Kevayachol and us, and in between every layer there should be a space, and that's called the Avir.
So my question is, if we had a more advanced telescope, would we be able to see it?
No.
Are these rakiyas more on an abstract or a different?
You wouldn't be able to see
it. I would.
No.
I would not.
No.
So I don't know, right? These are you know, I'm inclined to think that these are exactly that they're esoteric, you know, concepts, and that they don't necessarily need to correspond to the physical universe that we observe in our, you know, in our astronomy, right? Exactly. So
don't try to make it work.
Mm-hmm. But there are these Sheva Rakiyim, and the Chazal, who were familiar with the metaphysical worlds, told us that if you knew how to perceive them, not necessarily with a telescope, but the way that spiritually attuned people are able to perceive the structure of this, the spiritual structure of the universe, that you would discover that there's a sequence of seven, and each of the seven is separated from the next by an avir. And therefore, the tcheles, presumably, is meant to symbolize the rakiyas, right? If you translate it literally as a heaven, look at the sky,
blue.
It's blue. So the blue is associated with a rakiya, with a heaven, whatever it means, whether it's a real heaven or whether it's an abstract heaven, but blue is associated with the idea of heaven, and the whites, presumably, are the avirim, right? Those are the gnats, or the whites will represent the avirim that are between them. The gnats or the whites, meaning, right? It could be that what the Gemara wants of us is to have three blue strings followed by a double gnat or a single gnat, then followed by three more blue strings, followed by another single or double gnat, followed by three more blue strings, followed by another, and so on up till a minimum of seven or a maximum of 13. And so you might end up with three blue strings, right, or three wrappings of a blue string 13 times, right, with a sequence of 12 double gnats in between them. That's a possibility. Some other Rishonim say that what the Gemara wants of us is not necessarily that many gnats, but maybe what the Gemara means is you should have three times a blue string wrapped around the other seven, followed by three times a white string wrapped around the other seven, followed by another three times a blue string, followed by another three times a white string, all the way until 13 times the blue is wrapped around, each time with 12 groups of white in between, and those are the 13, maximum of 13 choyos to represent the seven rakiyas and the six avirim. So you don't necessarily need a knot to separate one choya from the next, But you could have a wrapping of a white string without a knot that also serves to separate one cholya from the next. Boaz, and then what's your name? Menachem. Boaz and then Menachem.
I'm just thinking, you know, how do you get the color of the rakia? It's water and ash together. When you go into outer space, it's no more water. It's the absence of water. So what we're talking about, the, I don't know, call it the stratosphere, I don't know what it's called out there, but once you get out of the atmosphere of the Earth, that's it, there's no more, it's dark. It's a universe, it's black. So they call it black hole, that's what it is, black. The only blue you're going to see is over here when, that's why the Earth is round, that you wrap it around, maybe those rakim are wrapped around the Earth seven times, with the clouds being the white. I mean, that's the way I prefer to see it, you know, the white are the clouds that are between each rakia and each...
Boaz, Tchelet is the memutza between white and black, that's what it is.
White and black. It's Tchelet.
No, white, excuse me, white and black, you're going to get gray, you're not going to get blue.
No.
Yeah, so again, I would say that we're not talking about a physical phenomenon. My feeling is that we're talking just like pink is, you know, is fight against cancer, and in orange is Gush Katif, and green is environmentalism, right? And all the colors, right, we've given them somewhat arbitrary symbolic meanings. But in Yahados, I think there's an understanding, right, based on Kabbalah, that colors, right, are not incidentally associated with various things, but rather that there is an inherent symbolic meaning to blue, and that may have something to do with the association between blue and rakia. Meaning, it's not just arbitrary. Sky is blue, therefore blue is rakia color, but there may be something more fundamental of whether blue represents, you know, malchus or something else. Now, why that should be, again, I don't have enough spiritual insight, you know, to say why that is, but I think there's an understanding that the association of the color with the concept is not arbitrary, but rather is inherent. Yes, Rabbi Nachum.
How come, do you say the sun doesn't make light in the outer prism?
Yeah.
If you say that rakia is blue, then you should have seven blue and avir would be white. I mean, so you should have not 13 blue but 7 blue.
Yes, I was worried by, I was concerned about that a little bit also. I was troubled by that if you're trying to symbolize two separate things, then you should presumably have a separate symbol for each of them. So the only thing I could think of is that maybe the avirim are just as important as the rakias somehow. And so we didn't want to give them a less chashuv symbol. And so even though that meant that they had to have this uniformity, we don't give them, you know, proper tribute to the diversity, right, between the rakias and the avirim, but at least we're giving, you know, both of them the proper kavod that they deserve. As you'll see, there are many people who say that the actual halacha is that you're supposed to have, right, seven. That's what they advise, you know, they advise to do the seven and not 13, right? But they say that whatever you use to separate, right, the seven cholyas from one another, that will hint also to the avirim. And so even though it's not what the Gemara says, they end up like bringing it in through the back door that you do have this hint to the avirim, exactly as you said, with whatever it is that separates the cholyas, whether it's gnats or whether it's white wrappings. And so you do have the, if you do 13, then you don't have a remez, then you have a higher level remez to the avirim, but even if you do 7, you still have this lower level remez to the avirim, and that's, I think, what most suggest to do. Let's maybe do 2-3 more lines, and then we'll get to Alvin's Talis. Okay, so the Gemara says, Tana. Again, how does one manufacture, how does one assemble the cholyos? Kishehu maschil, when he starts out, maschil belavan, he should start off with white, because this should already be familiar to us, hakanaf, when it says, right, v'nasatal, tzitzis hakanaf, it means min kanaf, that the tzitzis must resemble the loose strings that are left over before you hem the baged. But You put the four strings into the hole of the baguette, but then the first, what you wrap first is a white string, so that the first wrapping looks like you're just taking one of the loose strings from the baguette and wrapping it around. You're not the treles, meaning you're wrapping the white around the blue, as instead of the blue around the white. The blue is in there, right, but the blue is in the center rather than being wrapped around. So you're maschil belavan. And then, because hakanaf mean kanaf. Kishehu misayim, when he finishes, the cholya, which is furthest from the baged, he should be misayim also with lavan, because ma'alin bakodesh ve'in mulidin, the white has more kedusha than the blue, and so you don't want... It has more kedusha than the blue, which is in direct contradistinction to what I said earlier, that the blue is more chashuv, and therefore the blue, right, the blue, the whole tzitzis is called techeles, and the chachmei lunil, right, the rabbis of the city of Lunel in Provence, which is southern France, sent this shaila to the Rambam, and I hope that we'll have a chance to address it, not tomorrow, but sometime in the coming weeks. How can it be that sometimes we say the white has more kedusha, but at the same time, right, the blue has something special to it, which makes the tzitzis treles being the proper, you know, term for tzitzis. And you know, we know in general when you've got a building without a foundation, right, the building's not going to stand. But at the same time, a foundation alone, right, does not a building make. And there's in halacha in general, we find there are many things that are considered to be foundational, and there are many other things which are considered to be the apex, the beautiful structure. And it's always a tension to know, right, which of the two is more quote-unquote important, right? Because after all, the structure couldn't stand without the foundation, but at the same time, the purpose of the foundation is to support the structure. And so how are we supposed to know which one is more chashuv? Very often we'll make some sort of a compromise, which may be what's at play here when it comes to the tzitzis, that the white is more basic, necessary, right? But at the same time, the most exalted, you know, form of tzitzis incorporates tcheles as well, and there needs to be within the text and within the practice, there needs to be an acknowledgement of the importance of both of them. So your maskil belavan, your mesayim belavan, because malin bakodesh velo moridin, what do you do in between? So there's a discussion. Do you do white and then all blue, followed by the last one being white, or do you do white, blue, white, blue, white, blue, white? That's the minimum of seven, because in an odd number you're never going to have exactly the same, right? If you split it in two, you can't. So maybe what that means to say is that the extra cholya should be awarded to the lavan, and it should be the last cholya, so that the last one is not at a lower level of kedusha than the earlier one. So that brings to close what we're going to read today. We're going to analyze Alvin's talis for a second, and then Mirat Hashem tomorrow, we're going to develop from this Gemara how we get to our contemporary minhagim of tying the tzitzis. Okay, so here we have, it's a talis with blue strings. Let's just first take a look for a second at the colors. Blue. Seems to be.
So they have black too. Yeah. They have black, red, blue.
So 1 second. So let's take a look. So this is a colorful talis. And what is the min kanaf of this talis?
White. White.
But it's a colorful talis.
Yeah. Rubo is white.
So everyone agrees that we don't even have to get into a question of whether min kanaf means the min kanaf of most talisos or most historical talisos, right? Even if you follow the min kanaf of this particular talis, it still is white because the majority of the talis is white. Now, the string over here is a trela string.
Both.
Is this a Rambam trela string or a Ravid trela string? Right, the Rambam says that when we talk about a pasil, we mean one of eight, the final product. The Ravid says that the pasil means one of four, one of the original raw material strings.
This looks like the Ravid.
This looks like
only one.
Only one. It's the Rambam's trelis. It's only one. So now, but it's interesting though, because if it were only one, I would have expected, right? It is the one that goes around, which we'll have to figure out why it doesn't conform. Because if the Rush is correct, right, that the reason that we don't do seven cholyas is because
we don't
we don't have tchiles, then this is a little bit astonishing, because it's only got the four cholyas. You have the potential, right, to symbolize the seven rakiyas, right? And so why didn't they? So we'll have to figure out, maybe they're working with that other interpretation, that the seven means the seven times wrapped around, and not seven cholyas, right? In which case you've got that, right? As you said, 7, 8, 12, and 13, so you've got the hint. Okay. So what else can we see about this? It's interesting, because this is what I would have expected, that according to the Rambam, it should be that half of a string is dyed, which means that when I'm looking over here at the loop, I would expect that half of it would be blue and half of it would be white. Yeah, right. But here what I see is that in the loop there's a full blue string, and I'm not sure where the string stops being blue, but it must be somewhere in the knot or else somewhere in the full cholya. Now, I'm wondering whether maybe this is like a pshara between the Rambam and the Ravid, because you know that the tzitzis would be kosher, right, even if all you had was three times around once. So maybe we're saying, okay, for the Ravid, we'll put the blue, right, into that minimum amount, right, going up into the cholya. So the Ravid would say, yeah, but the Evid, this is a kosher tzitzis, right, but on the chathila level, perhaps, we're following the Rambam and making sure that of the loose strings, that the seven of the loose strings remain white. So
they used the long end in order to do the wrappings, and then they cut it afterwards.
Do you see seven? I don't see seven. Did you count them?
Alvin counted them.
That's what it looks like. That's shorter. It's only the knot that's closest to the hole. That's where that end ends.
Yeah, it's eight strings. Seven white and one blue. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's what I think, David.
That what?
I think that the short end of the blue ends with the first knot. Then they use the long end to the wrapping wood before they.
Interesting. So that's how the meaning, instead of making it ending at the hole. Right. So I was just curious about why they didn't, you know, put in that string so that the one side of the hole had blue and the other side of the hole didn't have blue. That would have seemed to be the ideal for the Rambam, that it's exactly half of.
Because until the first knot, you had the blue on either side, but after the first knot, you just have the blue on one side.
Yeah.
Right. So.
Mm-hmm. What else? What else do we have to analyze here? But you still have your minimum of, there's one last point which was troubling me. If our reading is correct, that this, the reason that we don't have seven cholyas is because all that the Gemara asks for, like Mr. Schwartz is reading, right, is that you have seven wrappings, ideally anywhere between 7 and 13. So this is what's bothering me. The Gemara says seven hints at the seven rakiyas, and 13 hints at the seven rakiyas plus the six avirs. I'm going to leave you with this. So why does it say between 7 and 13? What does 8 hint at? What does 9, 10, 11, 12? What are those supposed to symbolize? Right? I know what 7 symbolizes. I know what 13 symbolizes. What do 8 through 12 symbolize? Does the Gemara mean to say that either 7 or 13, but the in-between numbers are not okay? Which could potentially pose a problem, right, for our cholyas, which have, in addition to 7 and 13, also, right, 8 or 9 and 11, or in this case 12, right? Or perhaps the Gemara is telling us 7 symbolizes this, 13 symbolizes that, 8 through 12, we're not going to tell you what it symbolizes. It's too esoteric. Or perhaps you figure it out by yourself. So I want to pick up with this question tomorrow: what happened to the symbolism of 8 through 12? And that's going to further develop how we arrive at our minhag for tying the cholyas of the tzitzis.
But the three.